5:30, so I'll declare the meeting open. I'd like to welcome everyone, particularly the members of the public gallery. I'd also like to commence our meeting by acknowledging the Gumbangia people, who are the traditional custodians of this land. I pay respect to elders, past and present, and extend that respect to any Aboriginal people present this evening. Also, given the passing of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, regardless of our views in terms of monarchy or republicanism or the history of colonialism, I very much doubt that there's anybody here tonight or and probably anyone worldwide who would disagree that Queen Elizabeth II is somebody who dedicated her life to serving in the role that she didn't actually choose but fell upon her shoulders by birth, and that she did it with great grace and fairness to all. So I will ask everyone to stand, please, and we'll observe a short period of silence in acknowledgement of the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And we'll now go to apologies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This evening we have one apology from Councillor Martin Ballengarry.
Thank you. And I believe we have an apology from the Ministers Association, so we don't have anyone to lead us in prayer. So we'll go straight to disclosures of interest.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have two disclosures of interest this evening. The first one is from Councillor Troy Vance, and that's in regard to item number 11.2, the development application 2022/105. Second declaration of interest is from Councillor Ricky Buchanan, and that's in relation to item 12.2, classification of land as operational.
Thank you. Councillors, confirmation of the minutes from the ordinary meeting of the 25th of August. Moved, Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. Seconded, Councillor Jim Angel. Are there any corrections to the minutes?
No.
I was just wondering...
I
just wanted to double check whether the mover and seconder were both present at that meeting, because I think that was a meeting we had...
It was, definitely.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so seconded Councillor Vance. Thank you. Are there any corrections to the minutes? None. Those in favour? Against? Carried. There are no notices of motion, so we'll go straight to delegations. The first delegations are in relation to item 11.2. Councillors, that's on page 53 of your business paper. And our first, this refers to development application DA 2022-106, residential flat buildings. And the first speaker is Mr. Alan Rudge of Alan Rudge Architects. Mr. Rudge is speaking for the recommendation.
Only.
Yes, please, you need to leave before the delegation. Thank you. If you'd like to come forward and use the microphone. Yes.
Thank you. Slide, sorry. No, you're on the thing, on the dice.
I need to click it.
I'm not sure this is
going to
work on the PDF.
Just, we're just going to open it.
Okay. You have a practice? Okay. Good evening, Madam Mayor, councillors, and ladies and gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to open this evening by stating that as a local architect who has been practising in the Nambucca for over 50 years, I'm supportive of development in the valley. I am for future development and progress of the built environment. Yes, it is the right of any developer to seek approval for construction, but the right comes with a distinct responsibility to respect the environment and neighbouring amenity in which they seek to build. So we see here the area that you, I'm sure most of you are familiar with. This is Forest Road at the top there. And this is a photo taken before the whole site was denuded of trees. When Darren and Brianna Kennedy purchased their dream block in this subdivision, they anticipated that they were buying into a suburban environment of the character and scale of the existing development. This is their house here with a charcoal roof. However, even before the DA was approved, when you see trees felled in the dead of night, when there are detrimental effects to the land and uncontrolled erosion, accompanied by the loss of natural habitat, there is mismanagement and complete neglect for runoff, silt fences which have not been maintained, then we have to wonder about the future, true intent of the development. Is this a genuine attempt at good development in Nambucca Heads, or is this simply a blatant attempt to achieve a maximum FSR? We were approached by the Forest Road Action Group, a group of concerned, very concerned citizens who saw their environment handled in this way and wondered about the plans for new development adjacent their suburban enclave. We advised the group that the LEP allows for residential flats, as much to their surprise, but that is the fact, and that allows for residential flat buildings within this area. However, I also said that Planning New South Wales Apartment Design Guide states that suburban neighbourhoods are typically categorised by detached housing in a landscape setting. So detached housing, which you see there in that little photo down the bottom, and a landscape setting. Further, I'm quoting from the design guide, this is a New South Wales planning, considerations for residential apartment development in suburban neighbourhoods in a suburban neighbourhood setting include relationships and interface with existing houses, appropriateness of apartment buildings compared to other forms of medium density housing, landscape setting, existing significant trees, and the pattern of front and rear gardens. In our review of the development application, we began to notice, whether it was by design or accident, that the height, the natural ground level, and the subsequent shadows cast from the proposed development were not in accordance with our calculations. Our findings have been subsequently verified by an independent third party. On the left, I hope you can see this. On the left, you can see here where we've modelled Darren and Brianna's house with its optimistic solar panels. And these are the shadows cast by this development, which is in excess of 5 metres over your height limit, or 60% in variation to the height limit, which is supposed to be 8.5 metres. On the right, we've shown what their floor plan. See this little thing here, and up there, and there, that's 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 3 o'clock on winter solstice. On the right, we found that the private open space, which includes their north-facing alfresco area, was completely overshadowed. See here, and there. Completely overshadowed between the hours of 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. There's some debate regarding the number of hours, whether it's two or three, as a minimum requirement for solar access. But I would ask you, look and consider whether you would like to lose the sun that you formerly enjoyed, the solar access and your amenity. So, we contend that nil hours of sun is not an acceptable outcome. Councillors, you are presented with a design that has not complied with important DCP conditions, and if constructed, would result in severe loss of amenity and value to the surrounding properties. Please consider that as well. We note that your town planner has recommended that this DA be refused. We wholeheartedly endorse this recommendation in the interests of your constituents. The proponent can come back if you do vote to refuse the DA to council with a correct design this time. One by a registered architect, which is a SEP 65 requirement. Number two, that this complies with our DCP and which respects the neighbourhood in which this is to be constructed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rudge. Councillors, does anyone have any questions for Mr. Rudge before he resumes his seat? None? Thank you. Our next speaker is Ms. Julie Hugo, who's a resident, and Julie is speaking for the recommendation.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. Good evening, councillors. You'll have to excuse my switching between glasses and not glasses and peering over them like an old lady. It's only a recent addition to my wardrobe.
I do that. What was that about the old lady? Sorry, go ahead, Julie.
I'm in good company.
Yes.
We're not against development. We all live in homes that wouldn't have been built without a subdivision or a development project. When the trees came down to make way for the Forest Heights estate more than 2 years ago, we consoled ourselves and our children with the thought that homes would be built and families would move in and they would add to the character and the community of our friendly little street. And it is a friendly little street. We all know each other. As you can see, we've gotten to know a lot more people thanks to this DA. One of the residents of the street was talking with her children about it because it was actually really traumatic when those trees came down. They were big, mature trees. And the site that's being developed now, so you can see at the top of the picture, the area bordered in green, this is straight from the DA. So that's the proposed building. So that area, how do I describe it? Have we got a pointer?
It's on the...
On this? Yes. Okay, so if I point and press. Okay, so that's my home there. So all of this was bush. And so that was the first area to be cleared. And you can see the new homes in there now. That's a bit outdated, but there's a lot more new homes. So that was the first area to be cleared. And it was devastating. especially as they went along and the bigger trees came down. But the area to the left of the screen was left with bush. That wasn't cleared until earlier this year, before the applicant submitted his new DA. So we imagined who would move into the street, and we talked with our children about the friends that they would make and the fun that they would have. But large apartment blocks are different. They're anonymous, possibly transitory, and they may be being rented out after being bought as an investment property by somebody who lives in Sydney. This is our case for compliance. Alan's already talked about the height of buildings in the LEP, and that's the map. So Forest Road is just up here. So the applicant, one of the points the applicant makes in the DA is that Forest Heights or Forest Road is quite near to the CBD. So I don't know if you're familiar with these maps, but the green area is 8.5, the yellow area is 12 metres high. You can see on that map, our street is nowhere near the area where 12 metres is allowable according to the LEP. And it's all about the height. We love that the report recommended that council refuse this DA. I was so excited. I was ready to party. Because we are incredibly upset about the thought of this development going ahead for so many reasons. And it's not just the DA. It's not just the height. So these are other points of non-compliance within the DA. The building height, obviously, maximum 12.23 metres in an 8.5 metre zone. The building length, there's two buildings, they're 53.88, 54 metres long. The DCP states 24 metres maximum. Two buildings at 53 metres, that's more than a football field. That's a football field of housing in one block. Now, I'm told by Mr. Walsh that because it's articulated to go down the slope a little bit, that it fits in with the streetscape. But I've got a picture for that later. The separation between the buildings, the apartment design guide recommends 9 metres in between buildings, particularly when it's transitioning from lower density to higher density. So Tim's house has, on this DA, DA 2022-105, has a 3 metre gap between his house and the apartments.
Ms. Hugo, you've exceeded the 5 minutes.
Already?
Yes. Do you have
a little more
to go?
Yeah,
because I'll need a resolution of council. Moved, Councillor Jones. Seconded, Councillor Jenvey. I assume that what you're moving is that
an extension, Madam,
there be an extension granted. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Thank you. Sorry, but I have to do that.
Thank you. This is a shot of the development site. So these are the two new houses if you've been on a site visit. So the area to the right is where the apartments are going to sit. This is taken from the Catholic Church in the main street. So, the DCP states to provide buildings of acceptable heights is one of the desired outcomes, and to ensure compatibility with the character of the area when viewed from public places. So we just don't feel that that's compatible. And this is a comparison of the buildings. This is Tim's house next to, on the eastern side of the apartment blocks. And there's a picture taken from the DA. And that's just some nice pictures of our street, complete with kookaburras. My final point is about the wildlife. So you've heard that trees had to be removed. If you look at, this is taken from the Nambucca DCP, so the principles of preventing land degradation, retaining mature trees, retaining a variety of native species, maintaining the scenic and visual quality, minimising impact. We just really feel that those trees of the second clearing were taken out too quickly before the DA was approved, and that not enough checks and balances were put into place. There was some big trees in there, and there was trees that were taken out along the side of the street, which I believe is council property, and they were big trees. But the one tree that I'm talking about was huge. Me and three friends may have been able to get our arms around it. I believe that if council is doing its job properly, that we would protect trees like that. That's a significant tree. So I do have a solution. Well, it's not a solution. We can't bring the trees back. But we can make provision for the future. If that corridor that is a wildlife corridor along the creek line were reinforced and thickened, and the creek was, a condition was placed on the DA that the creek had to be handed back in an environmental standard, which I believe was an original condition of the DA with Robert Yandell, that creek or drain, whatever it's being classified as at the moment, that originally it was a creek and it should be a creek, and at the moment it's not functioning as a creek. A condition could be placed on the DA that has to be restored to its original value and handed back to the community in a good space, in a good way. That would do a lot for the wildlife, and it would also help with the stormwater drainage problems. At the moment, we've got a series of stagnant ponds in not-so-wet times, not at the moment, obviously. This happened last week. I believe what's happening is we're getting more traffic along the road. Since the trees have come down, a lot more people like to walk and drive. The bush is right next to us. There's forestry tracks. This happened during the night. The animals were already cold when I came across them at 8 o'clock in the morning. You can probably tell that little one was only a joey. We would like to suggest that a wildlife corridor is investigated. There's already one along the creek line, but one running from the creek across Forest Road, because that's the area that the animals are trafficking. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Hugo. Just before you leave the podium, do any councillors have any questions? None? Thank you. Councillors, our next speaker is Mr. Greg Ellen of Oscar Design and Construction, and Mr. Ellen will be speaking against the recommendation. Councillors, regardless of the delegations, what we're actually being asked to determine tonight is the development application in its current form. So for that reason, I'm going to move the recommendation.
Second that, Madam Mayor.
Seconded Councillor Jones. It's open for discussion. If there's no discussion, put the motion, and it's a planning matter. Those in favour, please stand. Thank you. Being none against, I'll declare the motion carried. I'm not sure whether public gallery understands what the decision was. Did? No, there's no need for that. It's just that because I said I'd remove the recommendation, it's the recommendation that was originally in the business paper. The applicant does have other options other than a challenge in the Land and Environment Court. I should probably advise residents of that. That includes a process called a request for a review. Probably the difference between what the applicant asked for and a review is that any further time spent by staff in assessing amended plans, that time has to be covered by the applicant. And that can be done. So, you know, there is a possibility that amended plans will be asked to be reviewed. It's probably important that residents understand that. Okay, councillors, we'll go to the next item where we also have delegations. So page 66 of your business paper, which is item 11.3. This is the development application for a modification to DA 2003-399, which is the 22-lot subdivision on McLeod Drive, Scott's Head. Oh, I'm sorry, we need to ask Councillor Vance to come back in. I apologise, Councillor Vance, we haven't moved anything. Okay, councillors, we have two speakers both speaking against the recommendation in item 11.3, and our first speaker is Mr. John Jenkins. Mr. Jenkins, would you like to come forward and address council?
Good evening, councillors and Mayor. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to discuss with you what's happening. I don't have any slides. I didn't realise we had the facility to have slides. So this is regard to a change to a DA that was approved in 2003. That change is the opening up of a road which would allow a throughfare or thoroughfare or a back route access to the main part of Scott's Head, which was not in the original DA. Now, I'd like to seek to remind the councillors that I'm speaking on behalf of the community that will be affected by this DA, and in particular, I'm going to speak about the traffic, but I'm speaking with the unanimous voice of the community in our local area. 102 people signed the petition. That is every single person that lives in this area. I'd like to also say that if councillors have some doubts about making a decision tonight, please defer, come out on site, talk to us, look at the situation, and then come back with the knowledge and to make a decision that's the appropriate decision. Nobody, I think, objects to the development of what's called the bowl in Scott's Head. Everybody knew it was going to be developed at some stage or another. The development's an old school development. It was approved in 2003. It's old style development, but so be it. Everybody knew that beforehand. Hopefully when they do develop it, it'll be a little more consistent with the coastal village atmosphere of Scott's Head, but whatever's going to happen is going to happen. No one moved to Scott's Head to live in Byron Bay or the Gold Coast. We all moved there to be in a quiet village atmosphere. So, look, what are we objecting to in the current process? There are several issues. Janet's going to talk about some flooding and other issues. I'm going to talk about traffic. The noise, the volume, the danger, and the sheer inconvenience of large volumes of traffic, including potentially heavy vehicles, using narrow back streets as a thoroughfare to Scott's Head, it's inconceivable that this could go through without some modification at least. I'm not sure the council report measured. They said that it was actually closer to go around the headland at Scott's Head. I'm happy to sit with any of the councillors or the council engineers or town planners and use the official New South Wales Government 6 maps and prove to you that it's actually 700 metres closer to go to the main part of Scott's Head if they take this back route through the back streets of what's called the bowl. This is a completely intolerable situation to use narrow streets. And the result, this will result in accidents and injuries. One of the paths from the school would come out at a major T intersection right opposite the school where all this traffic is going to be entering Scott's Head. There's another issue here that I know others and I did. When we bought in Scott's Head, when we moved into Scott's Head, we saw that there was going to be development. I got a copy of the DA. I had a look at it. I went, oh, that's fine. They're going to restrict this road. There'll be no through access. That's fine. I'm happy with that. And That's effectively what's changed. It was a very subtle change, and it was actually not even mentioned in the modification process, but it was in the plan drawings. And I think I've sent each of the councillors a fairly clear diagram of what the DA was in 2003 and what the DA is on this modification in terms of the plan drawings. Now, the original consent conditions, the original drawing is very clear. It's drawn to scale. It's not like just some equivocation or some uncertainty as to what this road looked like. When the consent orders of a DA are not clear, and the only reference you have is the scale and plan drawing, surely that should be a legally binding document, the same as the consent conditions are. And they clearly show that Gannett Drive was restricted to a 3 metre wide access. Now, not only that, this is not a trivial change. Changing a road from a 6 metre wide road to a 3 metre wide road or vice versa is not trivial. It's not a small variation. And it will have very serious and detrimental and long-term consequences for the people who live in this area. Why did the original developers put this restriction on Gannett Drive? Well, I can't speak to their intent, but I can speak to what the rules were at that stage. They've changed. DAs and LEPs, DCPs and LEPs change. You can go back to the OSLI database and you can download the various revisions. In this respect, in terms of roads and traffic volumes and road widths, the Australian specification, the LEP and the DCP have not changed significantly since this DA was approved. These are not, as I understand it, I don't know, the councillors can tell me if I'm different, but these are not optional rules. These are actually law. They're in legislation. You have to abide by these laws. There is no suggestion that abiding by the original DA, as it was approved, is unreasonable or impossible. So there is an exception for these approvals. If something's unreasonable or exceptional, it's too expensive or it can't be done. That's not the case here. They're actually building a road that wasn't there before. I'm thinking of reasons why they might do that. So, again, original question, why did the developers put this in? They put it in because they were following the law. The LEP and the DCP both follow the Australian specification for road widths and volumes. And it's very simple. I'm quoting, roads of less than 7 metres are for local access only and should be used to access less than 30 residential lots. So, in other words, two cars can barely pass in this road. If you park in the street, two cars can't pass in the street. You're talking about a caravan, which is 2.5 metres wide. You're now going to have trouble getting a single large vehicle past a caravan parked in the street. So this is why they put in that restriction. It was to follow the development laws at the time, because Gannett Drive, if it is opened up to Scotts Head Road, will be used as an access for hundreds of lots, including, for instance, people who are visiting Scotts Head. Their Google Maps will take them via this way, including caravans, heavy vehicles will access Scotts Head via a 6 metre road. So, look, what I'd like the councillors to do is three things, and I don't know if it's within your power to do this. I'd like to hold the development or the original DA as approved to limit Gannett Drive to a 3 metre pedestrian access, which it clearly was in the original DA. It's, as I understand, again, it's legally binding. But the second thing is to ensure that any future development in this area, and we know there's going to be much more development, though the whole of Bowl is up for development, is to ensure that any roads in this area also abide by the LEP, the DCP, and the Australian specification for road widths and volumes and how many lots they access. And the third thing I'd like councillors possibly to do, because this was a change that was slipped through. This didn't appear in any of the wording of the modification. So to ensure that any changes to the original DA, regardless of whether they're called trivial or not, actually have to undergo some assessment process as per the rules. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Do any councillors have any questions? None? Thank you.
I'm just wondering, Mr. Jenkins, would be available if we did have an on-site, if councillors did decide to defer, whether you arrange it with the community, would you be prepared?
Absolutely.
Well, that's not something that can be determined here tonight. If there's an on-site inspection, that's something that should be available to any and all members of the public. Yeah. It's not appropriate for us at this point in time to pick and choose
I'm not saying excluding anyone, Madam Mayor.
Well, there's, you know, as you're aware, there'll still be a limit to the number of speakers. So, but if it's deferred, there'll also be a further opportunity at a council meeting. But again, that's something... Yeah, a site inspection.
Could I ask Mr. Jenkins why he thinks the road or the walkway was changed?
I have to be very careful here. I mean, look, as always with these things, follow the money. Yeah. It makes the land, now that it's directly can access Scott's Head through the back way instead of having to go around through the headland, it makes, that land more valuable. I can't think of any reason. Why would the developer build a road that they don't have to? Mm-hmm. It's to make access easier. And that's the only reason. I'm sure the developer, if they're here tonight, might have another reason as to why they're opening the road up.
You mentioned there are other possible subdivisions coming off the back of this. Would this road in any way impact on that?
I haven't seen the plans for the rest of the bowl, but I'm imagining, as everybody does, that the whole bowl will be developed. It's all part of the DA, the same DA, but I imagine there may be a way... I mean, I don't know. Look, I can't answer your question. Simple as that.
Do you think that... I mean, you did your due diligence. Do you think that everyone who moved to Scott's Head realised that the bowl was going to be developed like this?
Look, I think that anybody with any sense did. I mean, I certainly did. I live in the bowl. And when I went there, I saw the road and I saw the development and I went, wonder what's going to happen here. And I went and got a copy of this DA, which you can do. You can just download them off the council website. And went, okay, that's okay. There's a pedestrian walkway across there. We're not going to get through traffic in here. And that's fine. I'm happy with that.
Do you think that the 109 signatures...
102.
I've got 109 here. Oh, okay. 28 submissions and one late. Was the road the main concern, this upgrade, this traffic?
No, it's the number one concern for traffic. I mean, this is a family area. Kids playing in these cul-de-sacs and streets and things, and it's a quiet local traffic area. Look, flooding is the other big issue. The troubles we've had this year. That whole bottom area was flooded this year. Three times, I think, it was flooded. So I think flooding and stormwater is the other big issue that people are worried about. If you build over that area now, what's going to happen to all the flood water? It's going to be even worse down the bottom for the people down the bottom. But that's, I think Janet's going to address those issues in some detail.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, councillors.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Yeah. Ms. Court, would you like to come forward and address council? And you're even allowed to peer over your glasses.
Well, the thing is, Madam Mayor, I'm not here for me.
I understand that.
One of the residents of Scott's Head asked me if I would present this for him. And so that's what I'm doing. I've turned into Mario Puski. And he's in New Zealand. So bear with me. I'm just going to read it out.
And so are you saying that we should record you as... Ms. Janet Court speaking on behalf of, which is what...
If you wouldn't mind.
That's what our minute taker
and
has.
Because I understood that there were only two... This is against, by the way. And there were only two speakers against, which sort of eliminated me. And I was wondering if I could have two sentences or so at the end of it.
We'll see,
okay. This is from Mario. And he said, to whom it may concern, I have just read a proposal regarding the extension of Gannett Drive to Scott's Head Road. I would be very concerned if this proposal went ahead. Firstly, the Gannett Drive and Sandpiper Streets are too narrow as a shortcut to the main town for cars, trucks and caravans. There are two sinkholes which are starting to develop on Sandpiper Street. You can't see what's coming down the road as there are cars parked on both sides of the road. And there is danger there regarding children playing on the road and people driving into the sun. Trees are also overgrown on the sides of the roads. I think he's referring to Sandpiper there. I think the planner has designed the area to place as many houses as possible without thinking of the landscape, which is also a flood zone. I have placed a picture of one accident. By the way, I think... they'll have access to them? Yeah, thank you. one accident in which the driver was very lucky to walk away. It involved Sandpiper Street. If you want another road to enter into Scott's Head, I'm thinking of running it along the power lines before the Ingenia proposed site. I know it would require a new road to be built, but it would be a straight run for everyone. I do hope you generally consider my objections, as I fear lives are on the line. Kind regards, Mario.
Well, Miss Court, seeing as you're well within the 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. I've spent a lot of time going through the business papers and reading about this application. And the more I read, the more concerns I had. And also, I was concerned about people seeing it there on the maps in the business papers and actually seeing what the site looks like and what the roads look like and where the school is. And I just felt very strongly that, Madam Mayor, it would be wonderful if all councillors would come out and see what we're talking about. This is not a trivial matter. There will be development in the bowl, and it's going to go ahead. And some of our roads in the bowl are quite large. They're, I think one of them I measured is 8 metres or thereabouts. And an 8-metre road, who could go out to Scott's Head Road, would be a very good idea, but not a 6-metre road, or less than that if we have the restriction over the drain. So my only thing is, please, could we defer a decision on this, and could all the people come out and have a look at what we're talking about? We're not trying to be difficult. We just want the best result we can get. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Do any councillors have any questions from this court? None? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, councillors, well, if no one else is going to move anything, I'll move that this item be deferred to the next council meeting with a site inspection prior.
I'll second that, Madam Mayor.
Seconded Councillor Jones. Is there any discussion? I will ask, before I ask you to vote on it, I will ask Mr. Walsh through the General Manager whether there's any reason why it couldn't be delayed for another, 2 weeks it'll be for the next council meeting?
Yeah. Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, no, there's no unforeseen issue with delay.
So there's no urgency or something that's time limit that's about to run out? Or
the developer has expressed his intentions to start as soon as possible. However, if the council want to go on site, I don't see any issue for that.
Well, I have driven the roads out there, and I do recall previous site inspections on Sandpiper. So the reason I moved that is that I would agree that it's important to actually see what the current road situation is like and to understand the lay of the land in terms of the location of the school, Scott's Head Road, and what was raised by Mr. Jenkins, the possibility of this road being used as what I would call a shortcut. I just think that it helps to be able to actually see it for yourself rather than try to understand it from diagrams. So if there's no discussion...
On a procedural note, and you feel free to rule me out of order, could I ask the Manager of Development Environment, if a councillor was to move in 2 weeks' time, that we go back to the original, i.e. to refuse a modification, what detail or what level of detail would a councillor need for that?
What do you mean?
Well, Madam Mayor, if
this has just been, the motion is to simply defer this,
yeah.
And have a site inspection. Yeah. So this will come back to us as is. What I'm doing is deferring it, so that before we consider this report and this recommendation, councillors have a good understanding of any potential impacts of this.
Hence my acceptance, if you rule me out of order, because what I'm asking is really a process matter about if after the site inspection, if we come back, we still have this recommendation in front of us.
Yes.
If there was a divergence of views, for instance, then a council may or may not have to develop reasons why a different outcome could be sought.
Well, it's no different to any development application that comes before us. We aren't bound to accept the staff's recommendation.
Mm.
There's a number of options, I guess, available. Modification, yeah.
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, Councillor Jones, I think it's just important to note this modification is a modification to a development consent. Development consent has been granted. Council granted consent to this in 2003. The subject modification is just in relation to modifying the width of a landscape buffer along Scottshead Road, the increasing the length of the internal road, and delaying the construction requirement for the construction of the roundabout on Scottshead Road until after 10 lots. The issue that's been raised by the community about the connection of the through road was part of the original consent, so it's already been approved by council. It's outlined in the assessing officer report in the attachment addressing the submissions. So the original plan to what the speakers referred to was a narrowing. That was between the proposed development is, well, the subject development is stage four. Stage three was the existing part of Gannett Drive. So the existing condition 17D, which hasn't been changed since the determination in 2003, it's been included in that, and it states the proposed road narrowing between stages two and three and four shall not be less than 6 metres curb to curb to maintain two-way traffic flow. So as it stands, the assessing officer at the time in 2003 acknowledged the road narrowing but made sure it was 3 metres to allow that two-way traffic between the two stages. Under the planning legislation, as this is a determination of a modification, we can't modify something that's not the subject of the application. So while we can inspect the site, understand the concerns, there is a legal issue of modifying something that's not part of the application. So you could refuse the application, but it's not referring to the road. The road would still stand. It's still part of the consent that exists.
I was just going to ask why the community of the opinion that it is part of the... I suppose we don't know the answer to that, do we?
From what I understand, the original development consent was for a through road. But there are people in the community who have seen documents. One of the issues I have with this is my understanding it's been modified 4 or 5 times. Yeah. And it made me wonder, at some point you've got to beg the question of,
yeah,
you start off with a development. There is the legislative ability to modify an existing consent, but that's usually only applicable where it's something minor. If you are changing the original development substantially, then you have to lodge a new development application. I do get a little bit concerned when I see modification on top of modification on top of modification on top of modification, and wonder whether it's an incremental, substantial change to what the original was. But this has occurred over a period of over 20 years. The biggest issue we have is this is an existing legal consent that is more than 20 years old. So, and as Mr. Walsh has explained, legislatively, we can only consider the part that the applicant is seeking to modify. In other words, and I'll ask Mr. Walsh to correct me if I'm wrong, it's not an opportunity for the council staff or the elected council to go back and revisit the whole development.
That's correct, Madam Mayor.
Yeah, and that's where it's going to be difficult. I've had a good look at this, and I think I've got quite a good understanding of it and the constraints that our staff are under, but I still think it's important, at least for the community's sake, that we do go and have a look. But the other reason I wanted to delay it just for 2 weeks and have a look is to see whether of some of the other issues, including flooding, where it does relate to the buffer, if there's anything that could be improved but without going outside of the legislation. in terms of, you know, if there was anything that could be added, you know, even if it relates to buffers, but if it improves or perhaps even inhibits traffic flow or slows it down or whatever, whether there's just any avenue or option to improve it. Because from what the staff have said, we don't have, no matter how much this current council might wish to go back and change what happened in 2003, it's a legal consent and we don't have that option.
This is being seen right up the East Coast now. We're seeing what they, because they call them heritage, what do they call them? Heritage developments or historical
legacy developments,
legacy DAs that were just filed away by people who, you know, and all you had to do was do a bit of surveying and chop a few trees down to make it look like an intent, and this is what happens 20 years later, especially after a series of amendments. So I think a site visit and a consultation with the community would be a good thing, yeah.
Well, again, we're tied by legislation. If a development consent has what they call substantial commencement, then my understanding is that it goes on forever, whereas a consent that's not acted upon usually falls over after 5 years. And yeah, and it's probably quite true, and Mr. Walsh would be able to confirm, that if this were a new DA today under current legislation, codes and so forth, the consent granted might be very different.
Yep.
But I don't know about the road width, though.
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, under our current DCP, it is a requirement to provide connectivity as part of subdivision. So in this instance, compliance with the DCP would be a connected road. There is an existing issue in Gannett Drive in that service vehicles like garbage trucks to service that road. There's only one. Only developed on one side at the moment, but to service that road to drive in, they can only reverse out. It was always intended to be a through road for one of those purposes. Yeah.
If I could just ask an additional question of Mr. Walsh, and you may not be able to answer this. Once the development is complete or whatever, any road work gets dedicated to council anyway, can a council later on put in chicanes or do anything that actually makes it undesirable for through traffic to use it as a shortcut, or would that in turn be in breach of fire access and reducing the ability of people to escape quickly? I mean, is there something that can be done later, not that we can force the applicant or the developer to do, but...
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, yes, that's all part of it. So that's part of the road narrowing provision that's in the existing consent. That can all get addressed at the subdivision work certificate stage, so detailed design. Mm-hmm. Likewise, the flooding issue. The existing consent requires requirements for engineered designs to ensure no flooding impacts on adjoining properties. So that would all need to be demonstrated under the current consent. As part of the subdivision work stage.
Okay, so even though they actually have an existing consent from 2003, there are aspects that they still have to present designs to the satisfaction of staff that...
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
Is it possible within that 2 weeks, and I feel free to say no to this, but to have a sequence of those modifications, or is that just...
Through the General Manager, Councillor Jones, yes. I think they were touched on in the report, but we can provide an expansion there if needed.
Just to back up the point made by the Mayor, I think that would be an interesting thing to consider.
Thank you. Councillor Janvey.
Can I just have some clarification of the Manager for Environment and Development from the community's perception of the originally approved DA to limit Gannett Drive to 3 metres. How do we get to 17D and it's no less than 6 metres to provide the two-way access? Like I can't marry the two differences, I'm sorry.
Through the General Manager, Councillor Genvey, the 3 metres comes from the scaling from the speaker tonight on the submitted plan.
On the map.
The condition of consent then reinforced that narrowing must be a minimum of 6 metres wide, so as part of the construction design plans, the engineered plans, as part of the subdivision works to this, they would need to show to comply with that condition that that section of road was at least 6 metres wide.
So the maps show 3 metres. Is that an intent? Is there in the drawings, is there an intention there around that? Is that
yeah, the drawing that it's referencing is it's in the attachment 5 of the report. It's the originally approved plan, and that's what that condition was written based on. So there's a narrowed section. It's hashed. It's not labelled a footpath. It looks as if part of the road...
The intent is not to have through traffic in the original.
No, the intent was to narrow it, so it's shown on the approved plan as narrowed, and in the consent it's reinforced, so there's ability of the consent authorities to modify a proposal as part of a development consent. As part of that development consent, council said that section must be at least 6 metres wide to enable two-way traffic.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other, excuse me, any other discussion?
Just could we have on-site on a Thursday, please? Some of us have organised our whole life around Thursdays, and there was one yesterday on a Wednesday. Anyway.
Councillors, staff send out diary invitations a week beforehand. All you've got to do is press one button, and if the staff see that the majority of councillors can't attend, they'll immediately reschedule. So... but I'm quite sure the general manager or Mr. Walsh will do their best to make it on a Thursday. But if you get a diary invitation, and as I've reminded everyone in the past, check. You were all given a council-supplied iPad. Check it daily. If there's a diary invitation for something that you can't attend, it's really important that you press the decline button, and there's the option for you to actually add a response and give the reason why or what other day would be preferable. Please do that, because the staff don't have the ability to work out where all of the councillors are on any given day, and that's not really fair to expect them to do that. Because, yeah, I know what happened yesterday. It wasn't... Well, we had... And the reason it was held yesterday was because of the citizenship ceremonies this afternoon. But, again, I think there were only... 2 or 3 councillor responses to that diary invitation that was from a week ago. So it's important that you do respond. It's fine if you can't attend, but just make sure.
I don't know how other councillors are going, but I'm having issues around that, and I'm having issues with my email, and I don't think it's me. I think there's something in the system that's not working, but it's not now. We shouldn't talk about
again,
that.
Well, again... as I've indicated before, our IT staff are always more than happy to help, and it's not unusual. I've been using, I discovered this afternoon, a laptop for the last 7 years that the staff just told me has been dodgy from day one and needs to be thrown out. There you go. And I have blamed operator for 7 years, and it does a certain thing that they told me was a fault in the actual laptop. So if you're having issues... get it checked. If you aren't sure how to actually use diary, email, anything like that, and you need some help in terms of training, particularly for our new councillors, staff are always happy to help. And we will do our best to try and make it a Thursday. Okay, so no other discussion. I'll still treat this, even though it's a deferral, I'll still treat it as a planning matter and err on the side of caution. So those in favour, please stand. Thank you, and could I ask the General Manager, for the benefit of the community, when a site visit is organised, how will people be let know? Will it be on our website, or do they need to contact council, or will we be notifying everyone who lodged a submission? What's the...
Madam Chair, we can do that if you wish, yeah.
We'll notify everyone who lodged a submission.
Everyone who lodged a submission.
Okay, so if you lodged a submission, you'll get a notification in advance of the time and day for the inspection. Sorry, I can't take questions from the public gallery. But I'm sure if you've got further questions, if you ring and ask for Mr. Walsh tomorrow, he'll happily answer them. Okay, thank you. We need to point out that next Thursday is a public holiday. Next Thursday is the 22nd, is it? Is that the...
That's correct.
It's the council day.
So it'll be the Thursday of the meeting.
So it'll be most likely be Thursday fortnight, the day of the council meeting. Yeah. Councillors will now go to page 18 of your business paper, item 9.1.
Move.
Moved Councillor Wilson. Seconded Councillor Buchanan. Is there any discussion? None. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 34, item 9.2. Moved Councillor Wilson. Seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion?
Any notable changes, Madam Mayor, on your opinion?
Not really, but you know, if anyone's got any comment, you've got the opportunity to forward them and include them. Councillor Vance.
It's in regards to social media as well. It's all media, not just papers, news and
If there's no other discussion, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 36, item 9.3. Moved Councillor Angel. Seconded Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. There are no late reports in this section. So page 39, item 10.1. Do we have a moved Councillor Jenby? Seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion?
Just that it's
Councillor Jenby.
Just a comment. It's good to see some people from LACS on this. So it would make for an it's good to see some representatives from our local LACS on this. So there's quite a wide scope there, from Chamber of Commerce to connections through to on the board of Destination North Coast. So yeah, I think it's. Be small, but it's some good representation there.
There's no other discussion. Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 41, item 10.2. Moved Councillor Vance. Seconded Councillor Jenby. Any discussion? Would like to ask, do we ever do a review of new software and any sort of assessment as to whether it was value for money?
Madam Chair, our manager of IT does that regularly. We have discussions on that very issue this morning, actually, about what's coming, what's likely to happen. And unfortunately, the report for you this evening is all about just staying the course at the moment. It's very much a status quo because we don't have much wriggle room at the moment, but we are actively assessing the other ERPs in the marketplace.
Okay, thank you, because they are relatively expensive and...
Very expensive.
You know, you sort of want to know that they're actually going to provide efficiency and accuracy and value for money. Councillor Jenby.
It's a bit of a necessary evil at this stage, isn't it? Pretty much a stepping stone, but, can't do without it.
Thank you. If there's no other discussion, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 43, item 10.3.
Move.
Moved Councillor Wilson. Seconded Councillor Buchanan, was it? Sorry, I'm trying to read hand signals here. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 45, item 10.4. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion?
Yes, Madam Mayor. I might be not totally 100% on topic, but I note that the Coffs Harbour Shire elected their deputy mayor, and I was just wondering whether we were in cycle or whether we were going to wait for the December the 4 trigger. It's 2 years till the next council election. That would be 2 12-month terms. Because the last council election was out of sync, I just note that Coffs have done that this week, and I noted we hadn't done it. Have we given consideration?
It has, and I'll ask through the general manager. I think Mr Hunt is in a position to respond to that.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Through the general manager, there is a report to the next meeting, so it's to elect a deputy mayor.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 46, item 10.5.
Move that, Madam Mayor.
Moved Councillor Jones. Seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. And we have a late report. So page 2 of your late agenda. This is the draft annual financial statements.
I'll move for discussion, Madam Mayor.
Moved Councillor Jones. Seconded Councillor Angel.
What does it all mean, Madam Mayor? Could I ask Mr. Sykes a layperson's hatchet job down to about 30 seconds? Win the red or the black?
Through the General Manager, Councillor Jones, it's always difficult for me to give a very succinct analysis like that, as you're probably aware. The operating performance ratio has improved significantly. On the consolidated funds basis, it's turned around to from a negative result of... Sorry, this is... indicator 2.1 in the table in that report, from negative 5.47 in 2021 to 0.74. Mm. And the general fund has gone from negative 0.507 to 5.44%. These are all, as it states in the report, all pre-audit figures, so changes could occur.
Madam Chair, just for the council's information, that does indicate that we've obtained an operational surplus in this financial year, so we're in the black.
Most of the other ratios...
So far.
Yeah, most of the other ratios swung around in the positive. Our cash position is still quite good. I think it deteriorated slightly. Our asset ratios are quite good as well. Obviously a reflection of a lot of the capital funded renewal works. The maintenance was also up. That was impacted by the fact of the maintenance related works for natural disasters. So there's a bit of an anomaly in that sense. But yeah, all in all, we're still in a fairly reasonable position.
Yeah, so a lot of that disaster funding impacts on our global budget positively, i.e. we spend time...
It does. It sort of, in a way, sort of clouds the financial picture.
Yeah, we don't get the work we want it done, but we get work done.
Yes. And you get income in 1 year for expenditure of a prior year. So.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. If there's no other discussion, Councillor Janvey.
Just a question through the General Manager to the Chief Financial Officer. The unspent financial assistance grants, I mean, they're up from the previous year about 700K or something like that. Like, are we spending it?
Through the general.
Like, are we saving?
Through the General Manager, Councillor Genvey, yes, it's the advance payment in the past has typically been 50% of the annual allocation. For 22-23, it was 75% advance payment. And yes, we always do spend it. It's got a roads component and a general purpose component, and when we do our budget process, we fully allocate that grant funding.
And there was quite a discrepancy on the prepaid development application fees. They're sort of half of what they were in 22. Is that a change?
Through the General Manager, Councillor Genvey, that's merely a result of the costs associated with that work versus the income received. So it just depends on what stage they're at in the assessment process.
So that's a normal fluctuation of timing.
Yes,
thanks. I probably had some more, but...
No other discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. We now go back to the main business paper and page 48, item 11.1. Moved, Councillor Vance. Seconded, Councillor Wilson. It's open for discussion. I'd just like to make the comment that I completely understand everything that's in this report, and I understand the gain, as happened in a couple of our earlier discussions, the legislative constraints and definitions that our staff have to work under. But I still struggle to see consistency and equity, not in the way our staff apply it, but in the definitions and the rules. Because what this council has seen is someone operating a business where they can park giant buses in a residential area where it's a prohibited use for 17 years on a technicality where you can just keep applying for a temporary use. So someone can park giant buses in a very tight residential area. We were required to refuse in a rural area on a very large property, even allowing one car to park outside of a shed, unless it was a home industry and everything had to be in 50 square metres. Then we had a consent granted out at Yuengai in what is essentially, again, an urban residential area with houses right next door, where someone can not only park and store machinery and equipment, but they can work on it with no restrictions as to noise other than the normal noise requirements, I believe is the case. Whereas for a home industry out in, dare I say, the sticks, the rules are zero noise is the technical requirement emanating from the home industry. Like, in terms of consistent and what is fair and reasonable, like if you try to explain to people in Yuengai that it's okay for them to have heavy machinery and trucks being serviced in the main residential street, but it's not okay for somebody to do vehicle repairs on a rural property a kilometre from people, I don't know about you, but I think I would find that really difficult to explain to them why that is consistent and fair. But anyway, as Mr. Walsh's report points out, unfortunately that's the constraints that he and his staff have to work within. So,
I think your point's well made, Madam Mayor, and it probably goes again to the difficulties we have around the whole process. And historically, a lot of these things have been anomalies. They've come down, industries have changed, land use has changed, expectations have changed. And a lot of it, again, comes back to that state planning scheme and the state planning laws that inhibit what you might consider the rule of common sense. If we were to go into residential areas, into semi-rural areas and rural areas, and had a township meeting and said, these are the 25 things we're going to discuss,
do you want to have multi-storey? What's your height limit you want? What sort of... I think we would get a really fantastic outcome out of that. I know it would be long and detailed, but, you know, a lot of ours, they're not fit for purpose, and they don't reflect the community expectations. And we're seeing this again and again, especially with these legacy things that are 20, 30 years old, and there's angst right up and down the coast. But I think your point's well made. What we do about that is a challenge.
Well, I think that my comment initially when we were dealing with the home industry, and I won't refer to the particular applicant, but my comment was that I wanted to remind people about the previous one of parking of a vehicle in a residential area. I think our planning staff may have misunderstood what I was pointing out. It wasn't that I thought there was any incorrect application of anything. It's just that sometimes, let's just say that if the applicant had been clever enough to seek a temporary application or a completely prohibited use, they may well have been granted a consent. It is possible for someone to get a consent for a temporary activity that is prohibited in a zone. That seems like, well, I'm sorry, but that's why I struggle with the equity of it all. Anyway, it's quite clear that it's not something that we can change, and as Mr. Walsh has pointed out, we can't change things that are LEP definitions and the part of the, what is it, standard template.
Could I just ask, in a slight tangent, but not too far, how many years do you have to be doing something before it's considered a right of use?
Existing use right?
Yeah.
Through the General Manager, Councillor Jones, it only becomes an existing use if the planning legislation was changed, which prohibited that use.
Yeah.
So if you had a developed consent and you
were operating... But the time's not an issue. It had to be legal at the time.
Has to be, yeah, you have to have a developed consent.
So if it was legal once, it continues to be legal.
Yes, but what it means is you can't start doing something that's illegal, and so long as you've got away with it for 10 years, suddenly becomes legal.
No, thank you. But if what if something was done and then was ceased to be done and then wanted to be recommenced? Like, no.
12 months, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Madam Mayor. So it's an existing use is you've got it, but it's become prohibited. As long as you don't cease that use for more than 12 months, then it... Yeah.
And a person would have to show the... satisfy the council that it had been a continuing use for that period of time. In other words, I think we've seen it in the past, like, say, a restaurant that is no longer not being used as a restaurant for 12 months and, you know, maybe was either vacant or someone used it as a dress shop. Can't just continue as a restaurant.
If it's legal. Remember we went through that
We had one in the past along, might have been before Mr. Walsh's time, where there were some of the requirements, some things are health and safety and there's no getting around them, but there were some requirements for the building. And I remember it was quite a controversial thing, and the end result was that the applicant was saying that it had been a restaurant previously, which it had, but because more than 12 months had elapsed, he was required to go back and start from scratch with a development application. I can't remember the nitty-gritty of it, but it was that it couldn't establish continuous use as that use.
I can't remember that.
I think I'm just showing my age. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It was in Nambucca Heads. The old Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, the most recent one that councillors may be aware of is the Matilda Street up behind us was zoned business, B3, which prohibited dwelling houses. The majority of that street contains dwelling houses. Some properties had had approval to change the use to commercial. I think one was offices and one was a dress shop, I think. But the problem arose that they will shut that down, look to sell the property, and someone wanted to use it as a dwelling. Converting it back to a dwelling was prohibited. So we changed the LEP to a mixed-use zone, which allowed both commercial and dwelling houses, which enabled that to be lawful. Yeah.
So it's easier to move backwards and forwards. Mm. Okay. All right, if there's no other discussion, Mr. Walsh has asked this to be treated as a planning matter, so those in favour, please stand. There being none against, I'll declare it carried. Page 71, item 11.4. Moved, Councillor Janby. Seconded, Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Councillor Janby.
We're not particularly active in this space. It's hard to know that we've actually juiced a whole lot of stuff by doing exactly the same thing that we've always done. To me, there's some anomaly in this dashboard. But anyway.
So are you speaking for it or against it?
I'm speaking for it, but it doesn't quite make a lot of sense that we have actually achieved more by actually doing something different from what we've done. But I do think in the future we will need to be far more careful in measuring and monitoring and having preventative actions about carbon emissions.
Well, I'm sure if there's...
for noting the dashboard, so...
Yeah, but I mean, if there are areas where you think that information that's been recorded is incorrect and led to an incorrect result, you should probably raise that, I guess, with Mr. Coulter, would that be...
Well, we've had enormous bushfires, which would have contributed an enormous amount of carbon. And yet it's, in relation to the data pertaining to land use, forestry, greenhouse gas accounts.
The report does actually address that. Mr. Coulter made comment on the bushfires and commented on the fact that there doesn't seem to have been any great increase in vegetation in terms of forestry land.
No, so why have our emissions...
Well, that's what he's raised in the report.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and there's an anomaly there, in the dashboard. So.
Well, the other option is that if you feel that the information's incorrect, you have the option of contacting those who put this together or the council contacting them and asking for more detail as to how they arrived at the figures. If you're not satisfied that they're correct...
All right, well, I'll move an amendment then that council contact New South Wales government over their net zero emissions dashboard and query them on how they came to their figures on emissions.
I think you might...
Nambucca.
You're still noting the information and then there's a point two?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wondering whether the wording of that is going to be clear enough to staff as to exactly what you're asking for.
You want to ask specifically about the measurement for bushfires?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, actually.
Okay. All right, with the... Yeah, well, specifically around bushfire measurements.
Otherwise, you're likely to get 1,000 pages of data.
This highlights, Madam Mayor, if I can go on a slight tangent, it seems to be the night for tangents. It highlights something that always interests me increasingly in this space, and what you see is you see the households, my household, where we wash everything and put it in the recycling. We try and do all these things, drive smaller cars and all that. Whilst the global economy marches on, growth and development, and chugs out huge amounts of CO2 and causes huge amount of environmental you know, I mean, the Nambucca Valley, the best we could do would be to advocate for wider change. Do you know what I mean? Yes, we can do it. We can act local but think global. But the concentration on what the individual can do or what the individual community can do is in a way masking a broader issue, and that is the global warming situation, climate change and the effects it's having. I just make the point that, you know, I think this is a far more complex issue than we can address by issues locally.
No other discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried? Page 74, item 11.5. Moved Councillor Angel. Seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Councillor Janvey.
I'm not going to support the recommendation. I think Council needs a clearer position on koalas. We have a New South Wales koala strategy. There is money out there. I think we could be moving and doing some work on our DCP. This is just kicking the can down the road. Offsets in our DCP is a really critical issue. Coffs Harbour has in their DCP that their offsets must be local. I think our offset, we need to set a bar at this. We really do need to have responsibilities in this area. We need to identify the threats. We need risk profiles based on those threats from urban development and planning. And we need to pull all that info in about koalas in a planning decisions and have tools about where koala corridors are, etc. We've done some of the work, but I think instead of waiting to see what the state government does with the SEP, I think we should be moving forward with our DCP. You could have two sets of offsets depending on what the SEP is, but I think the DCP is really important. So I'm not going to support this motion, and I'll call for a division too, please. I think all our documents should reflect the changing conditions and what are the best outcomes for koalas.
Yeah. Madam Mayor, I'll just mention that when we had our customer satisfaction survey, that, koalas did rate the highest, I think 76% or 78%. But I think that reflects a broader understanding that we do face a great challenge in this field. It's not just koalas. Koalas, as we know, are the icon species used for the conversation, but it's really about biodiversity. It's about land management. I mean, we only have to look at the state of the river and the amount of erosion. I've seen, driving around, as I'm sure other people in the room do, tremendous erosion, challenges around the riparian zones, challenges around extinction of some of our flora and fauna. So I think we should be trying to move as fast as we can, and maybe this is an area where we could go ahead of the state government.
Well, councillors, I've read this completely differently.
Oh, boy.
I've taken the view that that's exactly what Mr Coulter is suggesting, that, you know, waiting on the never-never for government policy, and that's why he's worded it, that a decision... Because the report starts off, given the lack of clarification of an integrated statewide policy approach to koala conservation and management, there is a question as to whether the council should continue to await this prior to preparing. So the recommendation is it be deferred for up to 12 months, get the money, use it on koalas in the interim.
Exactly.
And dare I say, I suspect that Mr Coulter is suggesting that given that come March there will be a state election, that there may be a significant change in policy and we may have something that's very comprehensive very quickly. Mm. So I wouldn't want to jump ship and do it, spend a lot of time, effort and money doing our own thing and then finding that there's a well-prepared strategy, particularly if that comes in anyway and it's legislated, which it may well be. Mm. And I guess I'm suggesting that there is a possibility of a change in government and that we should consider that. I don't think, look, I'd be happy to wait 6 months to post-March next year. I don't know about as far as 12 months, but I wouldn't want to go off and try to do our own thing and then find that there's a newly legislated one that we've got to comply with and we have to start from scratch and adopt that anyway. That's how I've interpreted this, that and that Mr. Coulter is pointing out that, you know, we've waited forever and a day under the current government or something definitive.
He's talking about a KPOM, whereas we could be moving forward with our DCP regardless of whether...
Yeah, but what he's talking about is our own localised management plan linked to it.
Yep.
We've been waiting on for years is for the state government to come out with their comprehensive plan of management that we... years ago we adopted a local... We did a draft Koala plan of management, which we adopted. We actually already have that.
No, we've never adopted a koala plan of management.
Yeah, through the government,
We've
had a strategy prepared.
Which
used to inform the plan of management. Yeah.
Yes, it was a strategy, but we had a study done years ago. I can remember
in 2018, and we've stalled ever since.
Oh no, this was even before that. It was reported.
Well, we've actually stalled. So.
Yep. It was reported, that was when we had a lot of community groups, including the Nambucca Valley Conservation Association, did a lot of ground truthing work and worked with some consultants. So we've done a significant amount of work. We've got to that point.
If we look at Forest Road development and the developer knocks down every single old tree on the site in what is possibly a corridor out of the bush, maybe not for koalas, but if we had something in our DCP about protecting habitat, that scale of that type of development could not occur.
I'm not sure that would have helped for the actual subdivision. Isn't that an old subdivision? He only had to put a DA in tonight because it's for the actual building. Reason that occurred on that site, it's like the Scott's Head one. It's one of the ones that Councillor Jones was referring to, a legacy consent or a legacy development approval. Yeah.
I mean, all I can say is that there is millions out there from this current New South Wales state government for koalas. We saying we're not going to do anything, and that $4,566 for some feed trees is just very small outlook in the scheme of things. It's a warm and fuzzy thing. So, you know, we outsource to LLS and land care, and it's really not good enough because we actually have responsibilities as the consent authority in this area, and everyone, koalas are endangered, and it's up to all of us to conserve native animals. We've got a role to play, and we could be spending some staff time. It won't be wasted if we have a koala plan of management as well. It would be moving forward, and especially around offsets. At the moment, there is nothing in our DCP. You can have a koala offset out the back of Timbuktu. It does nothing for our local animals and local wildlife. So that's just one very basic upfront thing we should be doing tomorrow.
As I said, I've interpreted this as give it some time. Like, we've got $4,566. To be very, very frank, I would not want to even consider a koala management plan that's been put together on the back of
No, we don't even have any money in the environment levy for koalas.
Well, exactly.
It's something that needs to be done.
Exactly, and that's why I think the recommendation is that we wait to see whether the state does one for us. If they don't, the recommendation is... I'd be happy to reduce that 12 months, but personally, I would rather wait to see... Why is it doing it now?
I'm not supporting it on the grounds that, you know, we need to be protecting areas.
It'll come down to a vote, and, you know, I will be supporting it simply because $4,566 is not going to give us anything vaguely like a decent koala plan of management, and we don't have funds to create one. I would prefer to wait for the state election results, then if we don't get a change in policy, is the way I'll politely put it, and there's not significant work done for us, then we would have to chase grant funding or, as Councillor Janvey alluded to, by the end of March we'll know election results. That's also when we'll be doing our next budget, which means we then have the option, if all else fails, to allocate funds under the environmental levy to go ahead and do our own localised one. But I'm just not keen to spend ratepayers' money doing it if the government's going to do it, state government's going to do it for us. That's all I'm saying, and I'm prepared to wait another 4 or 5 months.
Madam
or
Mayor,
whatever
people,
it is.
People far more cynical than me have suggested that the state government knows exactly what it's doing, and that the fact that they haven't done anything is exactly the outcome that they wanted.
Well, I'm not going to put words in Mr. Calder's mouth, but I'm suggesting that he's sort of indicating that that might be the case.
Anyway, we'll see what happens in the election, shall we?
Well, that's what I mean. There's now, my understanding is based on a speech that Councillor Janvey did when she was a state candidate, how many years ago was that? 4 years ago, was that the New South Wales Labor Party were working very hard on a whole range of policies relating to koala management. So I'm making the assumption that they've done a significant amount of work, and, you know, pending the outcome of the election, we may find that there's already a huge amount of work done that we can refer to, use and obtain free of charge without going paying consultants ourselves. That's all I'm prepared to wait for. But anyway, it comes down to the vote. Councillor Buchanan.
I have a question through the General Manager to Mr. Sykes. Is it possible? Well, I know it's not a terrible lot, but is it possible for us to round that 4,500 to 5,000 by contributing the remainder to make it up to 5,000?
Through the General Manager, Councillor Buchanan, that's the amount, I believe, to extinguish the grant, the $30,000 grant. If we were to co-contribute towards that, then that would need to be another recommendation, because either a source of funds would need to be identified, which I'd recommend, or it'll be coming out of working funds, which I wouldn't recommend.
Thank you. And then another question, which I'll put to the General Manager, but I think it's probably for Mr. Walsh, but General Manager anyways. Is there anything stopping us from changing that 12 months to state until after the election, or
you can do that. You can move an amendment and change the wording that rather than be deferred for up to 12 months, be deferred till after the March state election.
Because I do agree with you saying that, you know, 12 months is probably a bit long to wait. It would be interesting to see what comes out of the election, if there is anything in this area.
So you're moving that as an amendment? Well, I'll second that as an amendment.
I just asked if it was possible, but I'm happy to.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, I'm happy to.
Moving that as an amendment?
I'm happy to, yes.
Well, in that case, I'll second it as an amendment. So the other points stay the same. You're just changing. The amendment is a change to after the March state election rather than 12 months.
Yeah, so we're at least.
That then does give us that. It's very narrow, but it gives us a window to consider then whether we want to allocate in the following financial. We'll be doing a budget around that time, or we should be. Well, we should be well underway for a budget, in which case, you know, there's the option for consideration of funding it ourselves out of the environmental levy. We may even hear, you know, in the lead up to an election, you usually get the policy statement. So, you know, we may have flagged much earlier that either neither parties have anything in mind or both do or whatever, in which case we can... This is... So this just says until after. Well, if we get a heads up earlier, there's nothing to stop us putting something in a draft budget much earlier on. Then if something comes out that we're going to get one done for us, it's easier to pull money out of a budget than it is to find it and put it in later, isn't it, Mr. Sykes?
General Manager, that's correct, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's the amendment that's on the floor. So is there any discussion on the amendment? Councillor Trevor Ballengarry.
I just want to make a general comment about the koala situation. Has anybody sitting in this room taken the time to go out of town, go up the bush and have a look? Because I can tell you now, there are colonies of koalas weren't the bushfires, they've survived. So stick with what you've just put up. I agree with that. I work closely with National Parks. Their attitude's changed, and part of that change in attitude to supplement or bring back a breeding program for lots of mammals and animals, flora and fauna, at our west. We've got 3,000 hectares at Nambar State Forest. If anyone doesn't know where that is, that's the back of Old Gomera. Our program has just started. So, using a make it feral free, they've got a crew out there that's working on it now. Hopefully, we can have it fenced this time. Everything's going to take time, but it's a good idea, great concept. It's backed by the federal government. So, to those who don't know, we were lucky enough to be one of five national parks to be selected. So the knowledge is out there. And we've got our national park teams from Arville, Wilmina, Dorigo. They all come down and work there. We've only started work 2 weeks ago. I just be mindful of that. To realise anything, take a drive up into the national parks. Go up to Horseshoe. Go up the top of Kosakai. Go out the back of Inglebar. And wait there long enough and you will see koalas. Well, I'm just in general letting you know.
Thank you, Councillor Ballengarry. Is there any further discussion? Councillor Janvey, you've already spoken to the motion. Is it a question?
Well, there's an amendment. National parks, they're only 10% of the state. We've got the Pacific Motorway, the Pacific Highway. Last time we mapped koalas, you know, we know most of them along the coast are in the north of Shire, around Valar and stuff. They're under a lot of development pressure. And, we just should be moving forward with our DCP to protect the development that's occurring.
Is there any other discussion? Going to put the amendment. Those in favour? Against? The amendment is carried.
Collecting names, I ask that this be...
Wasn't seconded. You can't call a division.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. No one... explained only at, I think it was the last council meeting, someone asked for an explanation of what's involved in calling a division.
Yep, fine.
Well, it's up to another councillor to immediately support your division. No one did.
Obviously unsupported. No worries.
Sorry?
Obviously unsupported.
Well, I don't think necessarily...
The floor has spoken. Thank you.
Well, in fairness, Councillor Janvey, I'm not sure that that's the case. I suspect that given that people were looking at this and thinking about it, maybe, you know, no one realised that they needed to immediately second the request for a division. But anyway, besides, I mean, the result is a result. People can, people who are interested can hear the discussion. Why are you so particular about having people's names listed? Anyone who's interested can see what people, can listen to hear what people had to say and what the discussion was. I think they can work out how people voted and why. Divisions are usually for things like planning matters and major financial decisions or very large tenders. Anyway, we are now back to a motion. So if there's no further discussion, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried. Just to explain meeting procedure yet again, councillors, you do have the option, if you feel strongly about something, to request that your vote be recorded in the minutes as for or against something and give the reason. So, but anyway, that's something for you to go home and read your code of meeting practice. Okay, page 77, item 11.6.
Moved
Councillor Wilson, seconded Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. Any discussion? And those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 80, item 11.7. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 81, item 11.8. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 82, item 12.1.
With a... I'll move, Madam Mayor, with changes if I could. Was there a declaration of interest for this? Or?
This is the bridge.
This is,
We're still back at the bridge, are we? Sorry, I've moved on.
No, we're on item 12.1, which is the reconstruction of Bankiers Bridge, Nelson's Lane. Everyone on the right item?
Yeah, we are now. Sorry, Madam Mayor.
It's all right. I thought maybe I called the wrong item number. That's happened before.
I thought we dealt with the bridge.
No, Councillor Buchanan would have told me if I had. Okay. Did we have a mover and seconder?
Yes.
I'm happy to move it anyway. I'm moving the wrong one, but I'm happy to move it.
I'll second.
I'll second.
Seconder, Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 84, item 12.2. This is the one, wait on, we'll, yeah. Yes, we'll acknowledge that Councillor Buchanan has left the chamber as he's declared a significant conflict of interest in this item.
Yeah, Madam Mayor, I'm happy to move with a change, if I could.
So what are you moving?
The recommendation plus change to number three, along the lines that Mrs. Flanders... pay $1.
Ooh.
So, should no submissions be received, Council sell the land to Mrs. Flanders, $1.
I'll second that.
Seconded Councillor Janvey. I'm going to ask for some professional staff advice. I think this one's not sale of land to a community organisation. I think this would, your motion may actually be ultra vires and could be a breach of the Act because it's conferring financial advantage on an individual. Mrs. Flanders is not a community organisation or an incorporated organisation, so I just want to ask where we stand selling, because it will become operational land or saleable land.
Madam Mayor, I'd have to class it as a donation, I think.
That's what I'm sort of thinking, and that's got to go through the proper processes.
15,000 as the VG value is still way under.
Yep. Still
happy
cheaper
to
than...
cascade down. My next port of call was, we know what all council's costs are. I'd rather that we defer till we have some clarity. And when we did know council's costs, I would then amend again that the council costs be recouped from the 15,000 rather than added to. Because this has been a long and detailed process, and there's been a range of different surveyings, and I wonder if other neighbours or the councils share, i.e. the realignment of Rodeo Drive, how that was worked out, what the complications were around there. Did neighbours have to contribute to the surveying work around their fences?
I think because that involved the road, that was something... Because our road wasn't on the correct alignment, that would be something we would just cover. I think the surveying... being referred to here is in actually cutting off the lot, getting a new title deed as something that is not road reserve. I'm assuming that that's what this is referring to.
That's all I...
the staff are nodding.
My second point, I take your point around the $1. That was... My second point would be that we defer and find out, or maybe have a bit of clarity around the costs of council's costs, how that was configured and the amount.
Can I ask that the mover and seconder withdraw the motion and move an alternative? Because I'm not supposed to accept a motion that is illegal, and I am unsure. Yeah. I have concerns that this would be a breach of the Local Government Act as it stands, but there may be other options, including a donation.
Yeah, well, as the mover, I'll withdraw that. Okay. Can I then move a motion that we defer and that we seek further advice from council staff around specifically the issue of the council's costs?
And sale at a less than VG. Do you want some advice on that as well?
The value of general is saying $15,000. Yeah. Well, no, I take your point. It was a bit of an ambit claim, but... I take your point. So if we can have clarity around the council's costs and slash maybe the possibility of that being recouped from the 15,000. We have done this...
I'm with you. Yep.
...in similar yep. areas where rather than have a windfall gain, which I don't think any council... can't speak for others. I wouldn't be particular. It would be more comfortable for me if the council's costs...
Okay, well, we need... Yes. We need to get the wording of the motion first.
Well, I'm just going to defer the motion and that we've received clarity around the issues specifically in...
That's what I mean. Minute note taker is trying to get your...
Oh, sorry.
...what you're actually... Yeah.
Sorry to the minute taker. Receive clarity around the council's costs and its relationship and possible substitution for the overall cost of the $15,000 for the value of general.
Hang on, she's not that fast.
Two... the possible sale at the value of general's figure of 15,000. Where I'm going with that, Madam Mayor, there was a lot of surveying going on out there, and I'd hate to see that come back at a greater cost than the 15,000.
I think if it was done by a private surveyor, it would be about three times the amount of surveying that was done out there.
When I read it, that was my fear, that it could be a substantial sum. And when we talk about council's costs, there's been a lot of other planning staff involved. I just want to have
I'm not sure that they were looking at that sort of thing. I think they were referring to council's costs in registering.
Okay. That's just clarity. I just like clarity around that.
That's what we usually do. I don't think this is about paying our recouping our staff time at all. I think this is council's cost, as in just transferring title.
Thank you. And then that is also captured my question around whether that cost could come out of the $15,000, because that would be then a cap, if you like.
Yeah, but I think we've got to be very careful of not... This is sale of land to a private individual, not to a community group or an incorporated association. That I understand that there is a community benefit to this, and I understand the background, but as councillors will be aware, there were other parties who wanted that land and are watching this very, very closely. We just can't breach legislation. So I just
can't breach legislation.
I would want to be sure that we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And as the general manager pointed out, sale at the value of general's valuation is generous, in that if this went to public auction,
very generous.
Normally this would go to public auction, and I suspect if the council did put it to public auction and Mrs. Flanders had to bid for it, that there would be other bidders. In fact, I'm quite sure there would be, and I suspect it would cost a lot more than $15,000.
Zero on the
end. Yeah. For new councillors, this was explored at length in the previous council.
And as it was, I think we've gone out of our way to assist Mrs. Flanders.
Absolutely.
I mean, had Mrs. Flanders had to do all of this surveying herself, the costs would have been horrific, getting a private surveyor to do this.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
I think we all understand what we want to achieve behind this, but we have to make sure that we don't leave ourselves open for any sort of breach of legislation. I'm sure none of us want to be the guests of ICAC. Okay. So are you happy with the way that's worded now?
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
The report be deferred. Happy with that. Councillor Genvey, you still happy to second that?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
You're still listed? Okay. Is there any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried, and we'll have Councillor Buchanan back, please. Councillors, page 86, item 12.3. Moved Councillor Wilson. Seconded Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 93, item 12.4.
This.
Moved Councillor Genvey.
I'll second.
Seconded Councillor Wilson. Is there any discussion? Sorry, I've just lost my page now. This is the renaming of the public road. No discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. There are no late reports, are there, from engineering? No? Okay. Councillors, it's 10 to 8 now. We have two items enclosed. Do you want a break for a meal? Or do you want to go to closed? Because the other thing is, when we do go to close, I was going to ask for a motion to reverse the order so that staff can leave and go home. Or we can go to closed and deal with one and break for a meal and then come back and deal with the other. It means the rest of the staff can have their meal with the councillors and leave.
If I suppose, the councillors want to get home with young children, that's all. I'm not one of them. And,
I don't want to continue on.
Yeah.
Everybody happy to continue on? I'm fine. I'm just... I want to just bowl on ahead and have you complain later that you're all dying of starvation.
That's more fuel in the wind.
Okay, can I have a motion to go to closed meeting, please?
I'll move that.
Moved Councillor Jones, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Those in favour? Against, it's carried. Tape's on? Yeah, you have to open that door. I don't think you've got to open the side one. It's that one, the main public entrance. Okay. Is that for the ghosts?
There are ghosts in this building. Wouldn't the names are written up on the board.
Oh, gosh, yeah. There's a lot of names on the board. Tape back on? Okay, councillors, we'll resume in open meeting and I will ask the General Manager to read the resolutions made in closed.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The first item is item 13.2, SF600, sale of redundant sewerage pump station land. Was resolved that the council, subject to any offers being received by the due date, council accept the offer for the purchase of lot 1DP578503.54A Riverside Drive, Nambucca Heads, in brackets, subject to the registration of an easement over the land in favour of council, close brackets, from the owners of the adjacent lot 2DP129506, 50-54 Riverside Drive, Nambucca Heads. Dot point number two, the Mayor and General Manager be delegated authority to sign and affix the council seal to the relevant contract and easement documents. Next item in confidential was item 13.3, which was addendum to sale of redundant sewerage pump station land. This will resolve that the addendum report be received and noted. Next item in confidential session was item 13.1. It was a mayoral minute general manager performance agreement. Council resolved that dot point one, that council note that on the 14th of July 2022, training was provided for councillors in the performance management of general managers. Dot point two, that council support and endorse the priorities outlined in the report for the general manager and included in the attached performance agreement for 2022/23. Dot point three, that council congratulate the general manager on his positive introduction to the organisation and community and encourage his personal attention to the priorities listed in the performance agreement.
Thank you, and there being no further business, I'm going to declare the meeting closed and thank you all for your patience, courtesy and attention. Thank you.